You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
If the roar of the crowd gives you goosebumps, cashing a slip makes you grin, and above all, you love making your bookie cry, then you're in the right place. The number one spot for premier betting advice and wild opinions, shared with a fan base like no other. Welcome home. This is the Punch List MMA Podcast.
What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? As always, it is Dale Lippin in here with a very special guest, somebody near and dear to my heart. OG fans know him well, and new people. Ah, gosh, I just said the F word. Ugh, OG listeners know him well. Mm. And those of you who don't know are about to know. He has his own podcast, the Give Me the Points podcast, where they tear it up talking about every other sport that's not MMA. And he also shares something else in common with me, and that is a couple chromosomes.
Couple.
My brother, none other than the handicapper himself, Soup. What's up, buddy?
Nothing, man. I was excited to get the last minute text there. Fill in spot here. I'm honored to be back on the Punchless podcast, that's for sure. I'm going to do a quick plug. Like you said, we do Give Me the Points podcast. We've taken the last 2 weeks off due to we did our preseason predictions for the NFL. Mm-hmm. College kicks off this weekend, and then obviously the NFL kicks off next week. So there will be an episode tomorrow as well as every single week until at least February when the NFL season winds down. But yeah, I'm football off the mind tonight. No football. Right. No, football not on the mind tonight. MMA, UFC Paris.
The debut UFC Paris event. MMA has been illegal in France for quite some time, and it is now legal. And we really? Can, yeah, man. That's why they haven't done it there before. Yeah, it's very strange. It's like John McCain's alive, but he's French now, and he's just over there, and he wants to keep it illegal. It has not worked out well, but here we are, and we've a banger of a heavyweight tilt for the main event. Title implications on the line, no less. Yeah, it should be good. It's always interesting going to a new country and seeing what the fan base is going to look like, but I would anticipate a rather rabid crowd on Saturday. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. A first-time event, absolutely.
Yeah.
It should be absolute madness. It's like, you know, for example, like when they hold the NFL games in London, you know, it's the Jaguars and the Dolphins, but the fans still show out and it's an absolute blast to watch. I love, they had Nebraska and Northwestern played in Dublin this last weekend for week zero, man. And it was wild. I mean, it was a great atmosphere. So absolutely. You throw an event in a country that hasn't been able to hold that event before. Yeah. It's going to be nuts. It'd be sweet. Especially two bangers in the headline, as well as the co-main, for sure. It should be great.
Yeah, I want outdoor. This isn't an outdoor event, but I want outdoor UFC events that look like Polish soccer games, where they're lighting flares and there's smoke rolling through, and people banging drums and stuff like that. That is what a UFC event should look like. Really, any European event, but just any event in general should look like that. I would love this. I want more of that.
Yeah. That, I mean, I don't know if we're going to get that this weekend.
No.
But no. That would be pretty sick.
I also think that they should do like a instead of like, if they're going to continue to do the Apex cards, I feel like they should do like these sort of like themed events. Like I would love like a Lionheart fight night where they, where like they take like, instead of like Dana White contender series, right? Where you got five fights, have those five fights take place like in an abandoned swimming pool where half of it's filled up.
Yeah. That's, I mean, I feel like it takes away a lot of the whole skill mindset.
Nah, bro. No.
Tell you what, if it was in an abandoned swimming pool, I'd definitely take Tai Tuivasa.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Absolutely. That boy is buoyant. You can tell. He's very buoyant. Oh, man. My man looks like that's not a humpback whale, but what's the...
Beluga?
He's a little too dark for a beluga.
A sperm whale.
Yeah, the sperm whale or the there's a baleen whale, the ones that have like the big teeth. You know what I'm talking about?
Okay.
A baleen whale, I think, is Tai Tuivasa. But all right, let's see here. Before we get started, this episode, like all episodes of podcast, brought to you by Legions Clothing. Go to legionsclothing.com. You use promo code PUNCH and save 15% off site wide. Or if you're not interested in meat, or if you're not interested in clothes, but you do want to buy some meat, you want to get the best stuff on the planet Earth, you can go to Stay Classy Meats and use promo code FIST and save 10% site-wide. Okay. Without further ado, let's get into this card. We're going to move fast. We're going to move furious. And we'll break this thing down best we can. The first fight on the main card, Charles Jourdain at 13-5-1 is taking on Nathaniel Wood, making the quick turnaround. Mr. Wood is at 18-5. He is the +120 underdog here. And we've got Jourdain coming back as the slight favorite, sitting in the -140 range. Soup. Any thoughts on this one?
It's tough to go against Charles Jourdain because of what the body of work he's given us. I know his last fight was Shane Burgos, and I don't really fault anybody for losing to Shane Burgos because I love Shane Burgos and he's an absolute, just a blast to watch. And I guess in my opinion, I think it's good. It's not a lot of juice. It's good value on Charles Jourdain here.
Okay.
The opposite.
I am a little bit on the opposite. Okay. I'm on Nathaniel Wood for the time being. And the reason why, like you said, body of competition. Now, again, we're moving up in weight. This is going to be his second featherweight bout. He looked very good against Charles Rosa his last time out. We just saw him, you know, less than a month ago, back in July against Charles Rosa. Got picked up that decision win, first featherweight bout. Before that, lost to Casey Kenney. Win over John Castaneda, which I think he was like a -654 or something like that. And then a loss to John Dodson, which really kind of shocked the world there. These guys, you know, as far as quality wins go, they're kind of sitting in the same spot. They even have a mutual win over Andre Yule. My thing is with this is that if I'm on Wood, I think Wood is the more technical of the two, right? Like he's very clean. He's in the box. He's very committed to the fundamentals. Jourdain, more creative, definitely not afraid to get into a firefight. As we saw in the Wood fight, when he fought Charles Rosa, he allowed himself to get drawn into a firefight at the very end. Mm-hmm. Not something you can do against Charles Jourdain. You cannot allow Charles Jourdain to get going. You can't allow him to be creative, really. You've got to stifle him pretty much off the rip. Like Nathaniel Wood's not a guy to go out there and exchange creative strike for creative strike with Charles Jourdain. He's got to literally be the old man that tries to win with fundamentals. He can't be the flashy new kid. You can't beat Jourdain at his own game. No. So go out, stick to the fundamentals and grind out a win. I think that Wood is very playable at +120, but I don't know. I don't love this fight yet. I guess maybe I might want to see how they look at weigh-ins to see how big of a 45er Jourdain is in comparison to a guy that was a former bantamweight, Nathaniel Wood.
Right. And I think with Nathaniel Wood, if that's the route you want to go, I think his method to victory would be a decision. Mm-hmm. But damn, dude, we talked about this, but last week, no, not last week, because it wasn't a card, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I am struggling to bet guys that I think their method of victory is decision, because that I'm putting it in the hands of three blind people who have no idea what they're watching.
Correct.
The judging is so bad right now.
Yeah.
Nathaniel Wood at a decision right now is at a plus 270.
Yep.
So if I do think if he's going to win, that's his route to victory. I don't see him sleeping Jourdain, and I don't see him submitting Jourdain. But I do, like I said, if you like Nathaniel Wood, I think the play would be him by decision.
I also think, Jourdain inside the distance at plus 200 is a decent play as well.
Yeah. I think those are the two sides that you would go with.
Yeah. Yeah. And I completely agree with your sentiment here. And I think that's very, there's a lot of precedence to be, There's something to be said about the fact that this is going to be the first UFC event in France. We have no idea what judging we're going to get here.
Yeah.
So decision plays are going to be spicy all night long. This is one, where you have to manage bankroll correctly. You have to take spots, like you said, where you feel like a finish is probably likely, because betting people method of victory by decision, or people that are likely to grind out a decision, you can't trust it at this one. So you're playing finish props and finishers, mm-hmm, this event to be on, yeah, the safe side.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that. I think that's a good sort of filter to attach to what we're saying here tonight, so that way we can run everything through that. All right, next fight, William Gomi at 10-2, taking on Yarno Ahrens at 13-3. We've got the Frenchman, first Frenchman on the main card, because Charles Jourdain, I guess, is going to go French Canadian. So I don't know.
Right.
I'm assuming he's going to get a good pop all the same.
Oh, for sure.
But the first true Frenchman on the main card. Don't come out. Dude, what about just on the main card? Fuck, I can hear you guys in the comments already. Gomi supposed to have an S on the end of his name there. I messed that up. Minus 215 taking on Ahrens at a plus 185. So, the countryman is the favorite, minus 215. To be honest with you, if I'm just going to be completely honest with you here, I don't know a ton about either one of these guys. It's not something that I'm necessarily feeling like I'm going to make a play on. I do know that Gomi is considered one of the top, gosh, if I could freaking get my tongue to work, one of the top featherweights in the European circuit right now, has some wins in Cage Warriors and Aries, but to be honest with you, Soup, I don't know a ton about him. Jarno Ahrens, the guy that he's fighting, not a guy that I know a ton about. He has a win in Brave, which is a promotion I'm familiar with, but it's not something that I know a ton about either. So do you have any insight on this one or no?
No, I mean, I was just looking back on William Gomi's record. I pulled up Tapology and I was looking back on it. I mean, the majority of his fights that he's won, he has won by finish. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, there's not much here without actually seeing them fight. I'm not a guy that's just going to go out and blindly be like, oh, he's finished his last five fights in a promotion that I know nothing about. So, yeah. And I just, yeah, nah, he now he, what he's less than 3 months removed from his last fight. I do see that.
One of the things that sticks out though, just looking at it, is you're looking at a guy like Gomi, who's got a 70% finish rate. And then Ahrens is like a 60% finish rate. So both, mm-hmm, these guys have a penchant for finishing fights. But I, as of late, it seems when you get two finishers in there, it becomes like a stalemate. Like it's not like, so there's something, it used to be two guys with high finish percentages, you could count on them going out there and doing, like, you know, following the recipe. That doesn't appear to be the case this year. It's one of the things that I think has consistently cost me money as I try to identify some of the things that I've been getting right, some of the things I've been getting wrong. I'm going to purposely avoid, I'm probably going to avoid this fight unless somebody that knows a lot more about these guys hits up the DMs with some intel probably not going to see a play on this on my slip.
No, I do see that William Gomey was slated to fight Henan Burrell, but it was canceled.
For this event?
No, not for this event.
Oh.
In his prior promotion.
I was going to say, where the hell did they find Henan Burrell at, man?
Yeah, I know. Yep.
Name another fighter. Hold on. Outside of Johnny Hendricks, name another fighter more affected by USADA than Henan Burrell. That dude, Henan Burrell, real quick, is probably one of the most forgotten about greats that's ever existed in the sport. Like, Henan Burrell, for a moment in time at bantamweight, was like, they missed a huge opportunity to promote that guy, because what do you have, like a 26 fight win streak or something like that? Yeah. Crushed everybody. even going into the first TJ fight, he was a massive favorite over TJ. UFC never really gave him a push, never really got a pop from the crowd. But he was a murderer, man. That guy was a stud for a long time, a real long time. Henan Burrell was no joke. Then USADA came around, things got real bad real fast.
Yeah. John Jones.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
But no, I agree with what you're saying. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Henan Burrell was like, and this might be a weird comparison, but he was like, he was Max before Max.
Mm,
okay. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Max really didn't get the big push from the start.
Mm.
And it took a while for him to become such a fan favorite. And it just kind of flew under the radar for a while. But yeah, I don't know. He lost his last five or six fights in the UFC. And then that was it. It was out of nowhere. He was just like, yeah, he's done.
Yeah, the thing with Max is he was a novelty for a long time because he was so young. So it was like, check out this young dude with an exciting style.
Yeah, he's and then 40 fights by the age of like 27.
Right, and then he got, you know, he had a little time off, a little bump in the road, some knee stuff and everything, and then came back, and then he started putting it together, and then title fight as a result of a cleaned out division and made the most of it, man, and now considered one of the featherweight goats. All right, one of my better big money spots here this weekend. So I'm excited to hear what you think about this fight. Nasrat Haqparast at 13-5, taking on John the Bull McDessie at 18-7. Haqparast at a minus 245 here. McDessie at a plus 195. We're not supposed to say free money. We're not supposed to say the L word here, but tell me how this isn't either one of those things, man, because this is a dream spot if I'm on the Haqparast side.
I don't know, man. I'm not a big fan of Kelvin Gastelum Jr.
No?
No, I don't know. There's something about him. It's just, I don't know. Persuade me.
Okay. Well, one, McDessie's washed. I mean, I think we can agree that McDessie is on the downturn of just about everything here. He's not having a good go of things. I know the record's 18-7, but if you're looking at him, he had that win over Ignacio Bahamondes. That was a split decision win. That came over a year ago, and most people thought Bahamondes won that fight. Prior to that, a loss to Francisco Trinaldo, but wins outside of that, nobody that's even remotely close to being in the promotion anymore. Jesus Pinedo, Ross Pearson, Abel Trujillo. Trujillo is a pedophile. Pearson's retired. Lost to Lando Venata. Mehdi Baghdad, no. Lost to Yancy Medeiros, Cowboy Cerrone, Alon Patrick. I mean, his only wins are against low-level guys or split decisions that he should not have won. The flip side of that is Haqparast, yes, he has lost two out of his last three. However, Bobby Green, Dan Hooker.
And Dan Hooker, exactly, right. Yeah.
Okay. His loss before that, Drew Dober, and his loss before that, world champion jiu-jitsu player Marcin Held. Other than that, he's beating people, right? Hoffa Garcios, Joaquin Silva, Mark DeCasey, who's looked great lately. His quality of competition is significantly higher than McDessie. And I do believe that McDessie's on the decline. I mean, I think that's fair to say. I mean, if you're on the McDessey side, I would challenge you this. I mean, he's undersized at 155, a guy that could probably make 145. He's very small. He's a generous 5'8". He's smaller than just about every single person that he fights. And he's also getting ready to be 38, man. It's not fun to be 38 years old and fight these young killers.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you're on McDessey, I would say of the 18 wins, he's only finished 9 of his fights. So he's doesn't even really have a high finish rate either. So where do you think he gets it done? If you're on the McDessey side, bad judging, like, is that your,
yeah. So it's not necessarily that I'm on McDessey.
No, I'm just pejorative right out there, whoever.
On it's McDessey. More of the Hawk Pross at a minus 245.
Mm.
I think he throws the volume at McDessey. And I think the volume would be enough to get him out of there. And I like Hack Press by KO at plus 300.
I think that's a great play. And the reason why I was going to get to that, I'm glad you brought it up, because he's looked angry, right, at times. So he had the loss to Dober, but he came out and he fought the Alex Munoz fight and the Hoffa Garcia fight angry, right? Like he won those two, and now he's lost 2 in a row. And if I'm not mistaken, isn't the thing with Hack Parast, isn't he like, I mean, I know he's, you know, he's from Afghanistan, but like isn't he fight out of like Germany or something like that. So he's going to get the European pop.
Right.
I mean, unless the crowd somehow starts repping Canada as like pseudo France, McDessey's not getting the pop for this one. It should be Hack Parast. Hack Press by KO is a plus 300. I love that. And I think he's a parlay piece. I'm not saying like sit here, load up the bank, on a money line play here, but I think he's a parlay piece. I think him and, we'll get to it later on here, but, I think him and another fighter in a 2-leggers completely reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Keep him as a parlay piece, and also look at the, by KO at 300. Yeah.
I like it. All right. Alessio De Chirico at 13-6, taking on Roman Kopylov at 8-2. This fight's available as a pick'em some places. I try to use like all the same odds as I possibly can.
Right.
And right now, BetDSI, who I normally go with, De Chirico is a slight favorite at the minus 115 spot. Kopylov at a minus 105. I'm leaning the younger guy here in Kopylov just based on the fact that De Chirico is so wildly inconsistent, man. And he's such a meat and potatoes, does a couple things good, does nothing really well kind of guy. It's interesting, though. He'll get the Italian push. Do the French and the Italian like each other?
I don't know. I feel like I should know that, but I don't.
As a person that's really good, like that is really like both of us are very history minded individuals. Yeah. I feel like I should know whether or not the Italians like the French, and I feel like they don't. I feel like that's not a thing. I feel like
neither side likes to take sides.
Mm,
Maybe they.
It also might
depend who the other country's ally is.
Well, here's the other thing too: is that the Europe that we envision, it does not look like that anymore. So those France doesn't look like the France that it used to. They probably don't care at all. Kopylov probably won't get the pop just for being Russian. So, you know, we want to pretend that Russia's the bad guy all the time now. So he probably won't get the pop. Anyway, it doesn't matter at this point. Skill for skill, I like Kopylov better here. Younger, faster, stronger. I think that Tachirico is getting a little bit of the lean money wise for two things only. One is experience. He's fought better guys and did so longer, been with the promotion longer as well. And then obviously being a European card, I think they're riding that momentum a little bit. I don't think this is a spot where books have a ton of exposure. So they're okay with giving a line like this and letting the public sort of move it around a little bit. Don't have a huge lean on this, but I'm kind of liking Kopylov in this spot. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to take a guy as a favorite who has one win since 2018.
Right.
I mean, that's tough.
Yeah.
And it's not – the level of competition is just not there.
Yeah.
For me to even consider taking him as a favorite.
Right.
And I understand he's a slight favorite. But
right.
still, with that being said, you know, he was – what he – yeah, so 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. He's 1-5 in his last six.
Yeah.
That's tough.
His Sam Alvey numbers. I mean, he's not doing anything crazy. Yeah. And then his one win over Joaquin Buckley, right?
Yeah, Joaquin Buckley. And then in 2018, he beat Julian Marquez.
Yeah.
And then he won his debut in 2016 against Gareth McLennan. Yep. And it's like, so he's what, 3-7 in the UFC? How's he still in the promotion? There are people out there. Nah.
He's in the promotion for two reasons. Two. I'll give him two. One, good management. And then two, before Vettori showed up, he was the only Italian on the roster.
Yeah.
That
helps.
It's like being an Olympic athlete out of like Tonga. Yeah, I mean, like you and I could go to Tonga and play for the Olympic basketball team.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
You think there's ballers in Tonga?
There could be.
You think they're balling out in Tonga?
It could be.
Come on, bro. Come on. Jamaican bobsled team. That's it's case in point. DiCirco's on the roster because he's one of the two Italians on the roster. There might be three at this point. I'm not sure. Anyway, it doesn't matter. That's why he's on that. And he probably signed 2-4 fight deals, which would make sense. He's probably on the last fight of that second 4 fight right now. All right. I think we're at the co-main spot, are we not? I think we are. Yep. Robert Whittaker taking on Marvin Vettori. Vettori at 18-4. Whittaker at 23-6. Bobby Nux is a sizable favorite here, Soup. -215 over the Italian Dream, Marvin Vettori, +185. How do you feel about this fight?
I like Bobby Nux here. I like Bobby Nux by decision. I think Bobby Nux is going to fight. Listen, I think Bobby Nux fights Vettori in a similar fashion that he had fought Jared Cannonier. I like Bobby Nux here.
So just based off the fact that the way he fought Cannonier, that's
no. I feel like that's going to be that will be his. Listen, I'm not
the in and out blitzing karate kick the. You know, try to wear down the arms with kicks.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think Vettori like Vettori here.
I like Marvin Vettori in the spot. You do. I like grinders, bro. I like grinders, and I think he's coming. I think he's going to try to. He's not. He has to worry about the leg kicks of Whittaker because Whittaker likes to do that in and out karate style, inside leg kick, the knee stomp, the push kick, the what do they call it? The elliptical kick.
Well, your favorite. That's your favorite.
Yeah. I love me a good elliptical kick. He loves all that stuff. I don't see Robert Whittaker knocking out Marvin Vettori.
Nor do I.
I don't see him choking him out. That big, thick Italian salami on top of his head. That head looks like a giant wheel of Parmesan. He's just not knocking him out. So that being said, with three rounds to work, basically, a lot of my play is based on Vettori's style versus Whittaker, and I think Vettori is a dog. I know Vettori's going to fight, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, I want an underdog that's at least going to go out there and try to win the fight. Vettori is going to try to win the fight, and if he doesn't win this fight, he is I said this to a guy earlier today. If Vettori does not win this fight, he becomes the middleweight version of Ryan Bader. Remember when Ryan Bader was in the UFC at 205, he could beat everybody except for like the top three guys.
Yeah.
But everybody else, he was the boogeyman for. And it was one of those things where it was like there was for a while there was Bader and Phil Davis. And it was like one of those things where it was like, if those guys could beat everybody but the top three, and then they went to other promotions and they became champs. So if not, if Vettori can't get it done here, maybe we see him fly the ship and he fights Johnny Eblen and Bellator. Bellator loves doing European events. If If Vettori ever left the UFC and went to Bellator, he'd be a superstar because they would give him every European main event known to mankind. I mean, he really probably could make millions in Bellator. Just saying. Which might be the case if Bobby Knuckles goes out there. But Knuckles is saying he could go to light heavyweight and even heavyweight sometime if he wanted to.
I could see light heavyweight. Heavyweight, I don't know about that. I don't know about heavyweight. But so Marvin Vettori is Ryan Bader. I'm going to go and I'll say that Bobby Knuckles is Rich Franklin and Adesanya is his Anderson Silva. He beats everybody except for Izzy.
That's fair. Seeing the way that those two fights have gone, I think Whitaker and Izzy could fight 10 times and Izzy wins 8.
If not 9.
Yeah. Yeah. He's so in Whitaker's head now.
Yeah, it's wild.
I mean, the first fight, okay, whatever. But the second fight, Whitaker was like, I feel the best I've ever felt. I've trained the best. I know I've corrected my mistakes. I feel good. I feel strong. And he goes out there and equally his dominant performance. And I'm like, oh man, no, it's just not your dude. You know what I mean? It's just somebody's going to have it more than you. So I'm on Vettori and you're on Whitaker. That's the first deviation in the matrix. All right. See if we have another one here. The main event of the evening, Ciryl Gane at a -550, as high as a -570, some spots, taking on Tai Tuivasa +425. +450, depending on where you're looking. The record of these gentlemen, Ciryl Gane at 10-1, Tai Tuivasa at 15-3. Is there any heavyweight on the planet Earth that's worth laying that kind of juice on at -550?
No. Not against a guy like Tai Tuivasa. There's no way. I'm sorry. There's no way a guy that will stand there and take every single shot you throw at him and throw back harder. Absolutely not. Tai Tuivasa is an absolute dog. There's no quitting him. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
If this was a pick 'em, yeah, sure. I'm not taking Tai Tuivasa. Right. But at 425, man, I mean, come on now. Come on.
I think it's worth it. Listen, and it's the last fight of the night. So even if you parlay and you throw him in there, you can always hedge out. I mean, there's always plenty of opportunities here. But I think I made a blood oath several fights ago when I bet against Tai Tuivasa. What fight was that? I bet against him and I said I never would. And then I broke my pact and I bet against him. It was the
Augusto fight.
Yeah. The Sakai fight.
Yep.
Yep. And he went out there and made me look silly and he just brutalized Augusto Sakai. Yeah. So I will.
Well, prior to that fight, wasn't he was cut from the promotion and then he got brought back, wasn't he?
No.
Was he brought back for the Greg Hardy fight?
He was brought back for Stefan Struve on the Khabib Gaethje card.
Okay.
They needed a short notice guy. And that's, you know, what's weird though, is like, there was no like formal announcement. I don't think that he was cut, but it was like, he was saying online, like he didn't sign with anybody else.
Right.
Nothing else was happening, but he had a lull in the action there for a while. He lost to Spivak.
And then Blagoy.
Yeah. He lost to JDS, Blagoy, Spivak, and then did nothing for a year. And then they brought him back, which was interesting. But in between, he was booked for a fight with Yaris Donho. But it obviously did not come to fruition. And then they brought him in for Stefan Struve short notice and he beat the shit out of Struve in Abu Dhabi. So that was cool. He's a big boy. He's swinging. He's got momentum. I think a Tai Tuivasa win is fun. It's fun. Ciryl Gane. We can talk about how good Ciryl Gane is, how athletic, his fight IQ, the kickboxing, the submission. We can talk about all that and it's fun. To go ahead and just repeat the same talk points as everybody else on the planet Earth. But I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Ciryl Gane is boring. He's boring. He's a croissant. He's just a plain croissant. And when he's good, he's real good. But he's nothing fancy.
No.
He's nothing fancy at all. He's just a good staple. I know what I'm getting. And you're getting a super technical, very safe.
Yeah.
Talented, super talented guy, but fuck, is he boring sometimes, man? He also doesn't trust himself, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think the boringness is really, I don't want to say recency bias, but that fight with Francis Ngannou was so hyped.
Yeah.
And it was just like, and like you said earlier, when you have two killers and you throw them against each other, it almost is like, it almost never fails to, you know, upset you and let you down. And that's exactly what that fight was. Yeah. Where they land a total of like 140 strikes in a 5-round heavyweight fight.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Yeah. So boring.
Well, I mean, the Ngannou fight was really boring, but dude, the Alexander Volkov win was boring, and the Rosenstrike win was even more boring than that. Dude, the Rosenstrike
that's what it was, the Rosenstrike is what I'm thinking of.
Dude, the Rosenstrike win was awful, man.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Yes.
Awful. And Ngannou just wrestled death him. That's yes, what he that, did. I mean, but again, not that I think Tuivasa is going to go out there and wrestle, but Tuivasa is going to go out there and say, "Look, man, you might knock me out here, but I'm going to make you earn it. You're going to give me the opportunity to hit you before you knock me out." So I think an inside the distance play here is a foregone conclusion. Probably not worth playing in that regard. But I think that there's some value on some props here. So under 3.5 rounds, Soup, I think is at -150, which I think is decent. Fight doesn't go to decision is at a -250, which I don't think is too bad.
No,
for
a parlay piece.
Yeah. No round five start. So fight starts round five. No, is it a +160?
Okay.
That's available on FanDuel. That's 20 minutes of these guys banging. Do you think Tuivasa is going 20 minutes, man? No. I think he kills himself before then.
Yeah.
You know, Tuivasa by KO +700, gone by KO. Is it even money?
So I'm going to shoot my shot here and I'm going to say Ty Tuivasa second round knockout at +4,000.
+4,000. I like Tuivasa round two +2,900, but I think he's not going to submit him. So you might as well go.
Right. Just take the KO.
Okay. So Tuivasa round two KO +4,000.
Let me double check that round two KO. I'm sorry. It's I was looking at round +3,200 is what
+32. So what plus round one is 4,000?
No, round three is 4,000.
Okay.
But I think he's going to be too damn tired after 10 minutes to knock him out in the third round.
He can be swinging. That boy will be swinging.
Yeah, I think in the first round, I'll probably say Ciro wins the first round. Tuivasa is going to be pissed. He's going to come out, and he's just going to throw. Just absolutely throw. Maybe he catches him.
Yeah.
You get that 32-1 on your money.
Yeah. I love it. All right, so I got two prelim fights I want to talk about. These are the two spots that I like in the prelims. If you have one that sticks out to you, we'll obviously talk about that one as well. But the prelims for this event, in my opinion, are pretty thin, man. Not enough butter on too much toast as far as I'm concerned, but there are two that I want to talk about. The first one being Benoit Saint-Denis, taking on, what's my man Miranda's first name? I cannot remember this. What the hell is it? Gabriel Miranda. Miranda's at 16-5. Benoit Saint-Denis at 9-1. I know that you watch fights just as much as I do, but you're familiar with the body of work of one Benoit Saint-Denis, correct? So
yes.
So this is a big fight for him. And you know, being a retired special forces officer in France and fighting in Paris, this is a huge thing. And he's got a pretty difficult task ahead of him here. I know he's the favorite at -265. Miranda's at +225. But this is a no-joke spot for Miranda here at +225. Is there any value here coming back on the other side for Gabriel Miranda here?
I don't know much about Gabriel Miranda, so right. I can't speak to that. Based off of Benoit Saint-Denis, the hometown, I mean, but -265, it's so big.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. So let me ask you this. If we're looking at Benoit Saint-Denis, forget what you know about Miranda aside, right? Let's forget about that. Okay.
Okay.
Let's go with the fact of his pro wins, 15 of which, right? He's got 16 wins. 15 of his professional wins have come by submission.
Yes.
15. So we know that he can finish the fight. And he's taking on Benoit St. Denis, who in situations finds himself in a lot of grappling spots. He won his last fight against Nicholas Stoltze. But again, in that fight, along with the Easy Dos Santos fight, he gets beat up every fight. Like, he makes every fight an absolute war. So that being said, is there the opportunity for Miranda to play spoiler because Benoit St. Denis isn't capable of a clean win? It has to be a war. And in a war, there's scrambles, and in scrambles, I got a guy with a basically a 90% finish rate, 91% finish rate via submission. He's finished every win, has no win by decision. So 100% finish rate, but about whatever that is, 94% coming via submission. I just think Benoit St. Denis can't win clean enough here to not give Miranda a spot. What do you, I mean, is that, does that seem fair just looking at the stats?
Yeah, I feel like you talked yourself into it.
I feel like I did too. Well, you're supposed to be my voice of reason here. Okay.
No, numbers don't lie.
Numbers don't lie.
Check the scoreboard.
Check the scoreboard. Okay. So if we're talking about Miranda, let's see here. Where's Miranda by decision? Let me pull this up real quick. It's so weird, man. I don't have just a Miranda by submission. Okay. No, plus 550, bro. Yeah. Plus 550 on a guy that has 15 of his 16 professional wins by submission. Come on. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, now I've talked myself into it.
Now you have.
Now, if plus 550, I've talked myself into it. All right. Last prelim I want to talk about. Nasruddin Imavov taking on Joaquin Buckley. I feel like you knew this one was coming up.
Yeah.
Imavov at minus 270. Buckley at a plus 220 here. I feel like this is another good underdog spot. What do you think?
I'm sorry. I was looking at my prelim play. Who did we just talk about Buckley?
He lost to Dechirico.
Dechirico. There we go. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, he's got quality of competition. I mean, he fought Kevin Holland, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, Kevin Holland knocked him out, to be fair.
In the third round.
In the third round. Wins over Albert Duryev, Abdulrazak Alhassan, Antonio Ahoyo, Jordan Wright, Impa Kasangane. Only losses in the UFC. The Chirico head kick, which most people believe to be flukish.
Yeah.
And the straight from Kevin Holland in the third round. I mean, other than that, my man has been pretty killerish, bro. He's been pretty killerish, and he looked really good against Albert Duryev last time out, who I believe possesses a similar skill set to Nasruddin Imavov.
So, are you afraid of now, I know you prefer wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
Does that scare you at all?
It doesn't scare me because because Nasruddin Imavov is, I mean, he's the Russian sniper, right? So like,
yeah,
he's going to get the French pop because he fights out of France. He's going to get the French pop here, but these fights are back to back with the St. Denis fight. And I feel like the air is going to be sucked out of the room when Miranda gets that submission win. And then Imavov is going to come out and try to reignite the crowd. And Joaquin Buckley's there to play spoiler. I mean, if you look at who Imavov's beat, Edmund Shabazian, Ian Heinisch, Jonathan Munir, I'm not blown away by any of those guys. And I think that Duryev and Imavov have similar skill sets. And I think that Buckley can go out there and put out a similar performance. The only thing that concerns me is Imavov's tall and he likes the clinch as well, where Duryev wanted to fight at range. I'm cool with it, man. I'm cool with a Buckley play here.
Okay.
You had a prelim play?
I do, and it's actually the first fight of the night.
Oh, Stephanie Egger.
Yes.
Aileen Perez.
Yes. Okay.
Perez at a plus 240, Egger at a minus 300. What do you think?
I like Stephanie Egger by finish.
Okay.
Whether that be submission or knockout, either way. I actually like this fight, I don't like saying this, but inside the distance at minus 125. Both of these girls, their fights get finished. Mm-hmm. Stephanie Egger by submission is something I like as well. I think it's plus 300.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it starts off with a bang. And I know the mantra of punch list is women's science. Mm-hmm. I understand that. And this mm-hmm. is a huge, huge women's favorite at minus 300.
Yes.
Not as big as we've seen elsewhere, mm-hmm. but I don't know. I think her by sub, was it two fights ago that she submitted Jessica Rose Clark?
No, that, hold on.
Wasn't it?
No, I think are you mixing her and Stoliarenko up?
Hang on.
Hold on. No, it might have been. I think she did. I think she did.
Yeah, Jess Rose Clark by armbar.
Yeah, that's right. And then, yeah, because she armbarred Jessica Rose Clark, and then they gave her Stoliarenko. She got armbarred again. Yes.
So her last three fights inside the distance, four of her last five, six of her last eight, and eight of her 10 fights have finished inside the distance.
I think a fair point to make here too is that she's coming off that loss to Mayra Bueno Silva with the phantom tap that nobody saw. That's why she's making such a quick turnaround.
Right.
A little over a month. She basically said that was a wasted, basically a wasted camp. And she feels like she got a win taken from her. I think she's going to try to make a statement here against Perez. However, hear me out here. I either have to play Perez or I have to avoid the fight just based on the self-imposed rules that I'm trying to impose on myself here. Now, I don't know much about the Samurai Fight House promotion, which is where Perez is coming out of. I don't know anything about that. I will say this, as far as worldwide MMA rankings go, top 50 women's bantamweight. So apparently somebody thinks rather highly of her. She's making her promotional debut here. Promotional debut, first Paris card, first French card. It seems like an avoidable spot for me.
Okay.
Inside the distance, though, is at plus money. So just plus 115 for this fight to end inside the distance. A women's fight with plus money attached to it is something I can get on board with. So I'll probably play that.
Okay. Yeah.
Cool. All right. I think we'll put a bow on this bad boy. Dude, real quick.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Big boxing fight this weekend that neither one of us knew about?
You know what's weird? As I listened to it, I heard it, and then I just wanted, so with boxing, one of the things that's terrible about boxing is because everything's promoted individually, it's very hard to catch promotions for things, right? So you don't, you lose track of stuff. So I heard that this fight was a thing, but I never saw where it was finalized. You know what I mean? You hear that something's announced and you hear a date, but it's oftentimes that never comes to fruition. This being one of them. So those of you who are unfamiliar, Luis Ortiz, King Kong himself, is taking on Andy Ruiz this weekend. And if you're not familiar with who Andy Ruiz is, he's the guy that started the downfall of Anthony Joshua. Out of nowhere, what was he, a 15-1 dog or something like that?
Huge dog.
And knocked out Anthony Joshua and then got a lot of money and took a portly physique and made it a little bit more portlier and then lost it all and has since been on the warpath coming back. Hits hard, very fast for a big guy, very fast. But he's taking on Luis Ortiz. King Kong is an accurate nomenclature for him. He's a very big man and he hits very hard. Do you have a play for this? You like inside the distance maybe, or what are you thinking?
Well, you know what? I'm actually on the opposite side of that.
You think it's going decision?
Decision's at a plus 140 right now.
Hmm.
Andy Ruiz by decision, it is a plus 260.
Okay. And think he's just going to win some rounds?
I do.
Okay.
I think he keeps his distance. I think he uses his speed and yeah, I actually do. I like Andy Ruiz. I think Andy Ruiz wins this fight. I absolutely do. I can't bring myself to play him at a minus 350, I think is what he's coming in at.
Yeah.
So To get him at plus money, I do. I think a decision is possible.
Yeah. I honestly, I'm on him by knockout. I think.
Okay.
The reason why I say that is this is I think Ortiz gets behind on the cards and he starts throwing harder.
Yeah.
Ortiz is not a volume guy to begin with. So the more he gets down, the harder he'll throw. Energy becomes a factor. And then the other thing you have to take into account too is that in boxing, they will stop a fight if you're outmatched. You don't even have to be getting beat up.
Yeah.
But if you have no chance of winning a fight, you're just getting outmatched, they'll stop it and just go, hey, man, it's not your night. We're going to live to fight another day. And they'll just go, we're done here. Which is something that I think they should do in MMA more, but the dynamic in MMA is a little bit different. You can always like snatch a submission at the very end or fucking Leon Edwards head kick with 1 minute left, 56 seconds left, and would turn the tides of history forever.
Jesus. That dude.
You know what that is though?
Yeah.
That's the MMA world. That's the MMA universe writing itself. That was the axis of the MMA world being off kilter. And then it writing itself, because all these people talking about Kamaru Usman being the GOAT were fucking high. He was nowhere near GOAT status. Not in any division ever. Never.
Oh, I agree.
Never. His two quality wins over Colby.
Yeah.
I mean, as a Colby fan, I cannot argue those are his two most quality wins are over Colby, and they were decisive wins.
Yeah, there's nothing about a victory over George that falls as quality.
No, you George twice.
Yeah.
So you beat a former 155er who should have probably been 170 his whole career, but for my point here, he's a former 155er in Gilbert Burns. You beat a journeyman, which is fair, and not just Colby diatribe. That is exactly what you beat a journeyman twice, and you beat Colby Covington twice.
Yeah.
Yes, the win streak is impressive, but as far as title reign goes, to say that he was among the best welterweights of all time is ludicrous.
Yeah.
And case in point, because I'm glad we talked about him earlier. If winning streaks alone are enough to call you one of the GOATs, then Henan Barral is one of the bantamweight GOATs.
Yeah.
If that is enough. But no, you know what? When you talk about the greatest bantamweights of all time, nobody's mentioning Henan
Barral. Not a single person.
Nobody. Nobody. Had that belt defended it, what, three times? 20. No, dude. Was it like 32?
Hang on.
It was absurd. It was like, I feel the numbers 26 and 32 were sticking out in my head. I don't know why, but. If that's the case,
right. 32 straight fights.
32, see?
31 wins in a no contest over 9 years.
Fucking this noodle, bro. It's all in there, man. It's just, you got to bring it out sometimes. 32, yeah. 32 in a row. Nobody's sitting here going, Henan Barral is one of the bantamweight goats.
No.
Nobody. Nobody at all. And the same should go with Kamaru Usman. If you want to make him they'll eventually make Kamaru Usman a Hall of Famer just because it's a popularity contest and not a skill measurement, but it whatever that's not my battle to fight. But everybody that was like, oh, he's one of the welterweight goats. Go sit down somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Just, and he was beating Leon. I'm not going to pretend that he wasn't beating Leon, cause he definitely was
correct.
But no, calm down. Which, let me ask you this. If you're Leon, what's your next play? What do you do next?
You do not give Kamaru Usman an immediate rematch. You wait and let that old fuck get older.
Mm-hmm.
And then you fight him again, and then you beat him again.
I like that, because that's the same thing I've been saying is you
take the year.
You take the year. Take a year. Yeah. Take a year. Or at least 10 months. Like, if I'm Edwards, I'm looking for 4th of July. Like, I want on International Fight Week. Like, let's push it till then. Give it till then. That's what I would do. I would stretch this into oblivion. Let Usman get older.
Yeah.
He'll
be 36 next July. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let those knees that are already in bad shape, let them get worse. Because you know he's doing road work to stay and let them think. Dude, that's another 10 months of wear and tear on that body, bro. Just let it. I know the brain's recovering. So you either rematch him immediately while his brain hasn't recovered and try to knock him out, or you wait damn near a year. I'd wait for the year. I'd let him get older.
I know one thing I know from Leon Edwards, I'm not fighting Colby Covington.
No, no, you're absolutely not fighting Colby. Mm-mm.
Get his ass beat, drugged through the dirt.
Yeah.
He does not want that in his life.
It's a bad matchup for him. Yeah. The hard part with Leon is he's going to have to pull an Aljamain Sterling and hurt something and push it out further, because there's too many people that are too healthy that haven't fought in a while that have viable claim to a title shot.
Right.
And you know, one of them we're going to see next week, not this upcoming week, but next weekend in Khamzat.
Yeah.
He's going to murder Nate Diaz.
Oh, I can't wait.
And while he's standing there covered in Diaz's Mexican blood, he's going to call for Leon Edwards.
Yes, he is.
And you know, maybe one of the wet dream, but at least a spicy dream of the UFC would be Edwards Usman rematch, but also if Khamzat gets through Nate quickly, which I believe that he will, maybe push for, like, I don't know, somewhere around St. Paddy's Day, you could get a Khamzat versus Colby fight for a number one contender.
Yeah.
But even then that pushes, nobody outside of Usman and Edwards are fighting for a belt in 2023. Like, no. You won't, there's no Colby, there's no Khamzat, there's no, like, if you are expecting them to get a title fight in the next year, it's not going to happen. Yeah. Unless it'll be interim. If it is, there will be no undisputed champ that is not named Leon Edwards or Kamaru Usman in 2023. They don't move that fast. It's not happening.
And after we watch Sean Brady absolutely kill Bilal Muhammad in October. Yes, sir. Mm. Yep. Mm. Oh yeah. I'm excited for that. October 22nd.
It's a good fight. It's a real good fight.
Very good.
All right. Going to put a bow on this thing, guys. If you don't already do so, head over to the Give Me the Points YouTube channel, hit subscribe, or go to your Apple Podcasts and subscribe there. And it's not give me, it's gimme.
Gimme.
Like, gimme, 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 gimme.
Like Gimme, Gimme by ABBA.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody's going to get that reference.
All right. Gimme the Loot.
Gimme the Loot.
Notorious B.I.G.
There you go. Much better. Yeah. Head over there, subscribe, share, comment, the whole thing. Follow on Instagram, the same thing. If you don't already do so, you can do the same for us here over at Punchlist MMA. And the women's science t-shirts will be live pre-fight night this weekend. So what I've decided to do is I've got a store of designs saved up. I'm going to release all of them. So there is a women's science shirt, a Caucus Mountain Warrior shirt, a Punchless Pride Wave the Flag shirt, and there's another one too. There's one more that's coming out. So there will be either four or five designs that will all launch prior to fight night on Saturday. So I know you guys have been asking for the women's science shirts for the better part of 6 months. So they're coming this weekend, this Saturday. You will be able to purchase a women's science shirt. Now, disclaimer on this real quick. All of these shirts will be printed and released through Spring Tee. It will not be an Allegiance shirt. So if you've bought the previous Allegiance design shirts and Allegiance printed, manufactured, and shipped ones, this is not that. This is third party. It's the same ones that, like, Anakin Florian and all these other podcasts, most podcasters use Spring Tee for their merch. I'm doing the same thing as them. So the reason the delay is I've got to create basically an online storefront. It takes a while, and it's not, Trey was always really good at that stuff. I'm not. So I'm taking my time doing it right or not doing it at all. But the fulfillment will come through them. So feel free. I will post the links and all that stuff. You guys know I'll take care of you in that regard. So appreciate everybody that supports the show. Thanks for tuning in. Soup, thanks for coming on. Appreciate you. We'll see you guys on Saturday.
I got one thing. Mm-hmm. Also follow us on the Action Network.
That's right. Yeah,
you guys track on there. We have our tracker on the Action Network. All of our preseason props are out there. Two of which I don't want to call them wins already, but We took Zach Wilson's under on 14.5 interceptions. Yeah. He's not going to play a full season, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then Najee Harris under 1,600 total yards. He is dealing with a sprained Lisfranc injury, the running back killer. Yeah. So that's not good. I don't wish Najee any ill will, but under 1,600 total yards. But that's all I got. And for Trey.
Hey, real quick, hold on a second. Real quick, because I know Trey's going to listen to this. I want your opinion. With Halloween coming up,
mm-hmm.
don't you think Trey should go as Homelander?
Yeah.
Dude, I think that would be...
You should carry around a bottle of breast milk?
Dude, if Trey went as Homelander and carried around a bottle of breast milk, I think if he doesn't go as Homelander, it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, between the jawline... Yeah. As well as like the dead eyes
and the hair. Yeah, I was gonna say the sun soaked hair, not the dead. Fuck out of here. You're such a jerk. Oh man, Trey, I love you. All right. Yeah, I think Homelander for sure. For sure. I mean, last year he went as Maui, which doesn't fit. I mean, I feel like
Maui from Moana Maui.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man. Come on now.
No. Homelander. Homelander.
He'd have been better as that chicken that just pecks the wood.
Oh,
What's his name? Hey.
Wait. Yeah, because Pooh is the pig. Yeah. All right. I'll see you guys later. Take care. Be good to each other.
Fuck the Raiders.
You're such a dude. Why are you being such a hater?
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.